Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Seekers, Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. So many flying monkeys tonight. Truth Seekers, so little time. My God, some of the stuff that occurred today, and we're going to try to cover as much as we can. The Scooter Libby trial, the Irving Libby trial. I hate that name, Scooter. This is a grown man. This is a guy who belongs in prison. Scooter my ass. The firing of the U.S. attorneys, the reversal on the FISA spying, Gonzalez's no-show, the Hillary Iraq cap, today's press briefing with Tony Snow, the Senate bipartisan resolution. Kathy, whose job it is to find sound, searched high and low today for some of the sound from today's briefing, White House briefing, and it's not there, nowhere. The White House website has a link up with today's transcript, but yesterday's video. CNN's Pipeline doesn't have it. Who else doesn't have it? C-SPAN doesn't have it. Nobody doesn't have it. I think there's a reason for that. Today, Tony Snow confirmed what Bush and Cheney said Sunday. Congress cannot stop the Bush crime family's Iraq escalation and the increase of American soldiers into their killing machine. So we have some of the transcript, and we're going to give you a little bit of it, but we're not going to have the authentic sound. What Tony Snow is saying is what Cheney is saying, is what Bush is saying. And be clear on this, that Congress, the co-equal branch of government, is powerless. Powerless to stop this Bush-Cheney machine. So are the American people. So is the Iraqi government. So are the Iraqi people. They are making it as clear as they can. So is the military. They're making it as clear as they can that this administration is going to do what it damn well pleases where it concerns Iraq, and nobody, nowhere, no how is going to tell them to stop. Helen Thomas asked Tony Snow if the Iraqi people voted in a referendum to ask the Americans to leave, would the troops leave? Tony Snow said no. So the American people don't want this, as demonstrated in our last election. The Iraqi people don't want this. The Iraqi leadership doesn't want it. Congress doesn't want it. It seems like only this half-witted megalomaniac in the White House is in favor of such insanity as embedding our troops in the front lines of a civil war. Young men and women who are going to be picked off like so many doves at Cheney's personal shooting range. Good Christ! Who knows which side of the civil war these Iraqi troops are going to fight for, and who knows which side the U.S. troops are going to fight for. Who can tell? This is madness. And worse, this is premeditated murder. But Tony Snow went on today to say that Democrats who don't support this murderous insanity are allies of Al-Qaeda. Jesus God, we're back to this. Isn't this what Ashcroft and Cheney and Rumsfeld said 4 years ago? We're back to it. Hey, Tony. Psst. Hey, jackass, you got it backwards, you freak. Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda never had a better friend than George Walker Bush. And the American people are starting to wake up to this. Bush has killed more Americans than Osama ever thought possible. He's maimed tens of thousands more. Bush has brought Al-Qaeda into Iraq. Bush has increased their recruiting levels tenfold, at least. It's unbelievable. Bush may not be able to build the Iraqi military, give it some spine to fight what we want them to fight. Spine's not the right word. To brainwash them into fighting what we want them to fight. And Bush may not be able to increase U.S. enlistment numbers, but he sure can sign up new Al-Qaeda. So, Tony Snow, you freak, it's not the Democrats who support Al-Qaeda, it's your boss, who happens to be the best friend a terrorist ever had. My God. You know, you get tidbits for your program where you find them. I subscribe to the New York Times, and I make it a habit to read the letter section. Today, a little quick letter to the editor from Bruce Cronin in New York, and this is in reference to a story on the front page on the 13th, a few days ago. Bush authorized Iranians' arrest in Iraq, Rice says. So Bruce Cronin writes, the United States occupies Iraq with 140,000 troops, talks of replacing Prime Minister Nouri Kamal al-Maliki if he does not meet American benchmarks, and determines who may or may not enter that country. Yet President Bush accuses Iran of meddling in Iraq? In New York, we call this chutzpah. Yeah, it's insane. Iran is meddling in New York, in Iraq. Syria is meddling in Iraq. I'm surprised this rat bastard hasn't tried to tell us that North Korea is meddling in Iraq. But what Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Gates and the rest of these bastards order done in Iraq, that's not meddling. Nobody wants them there. Nobody. And they're giving everybody the middle finger. I cannot get my mind around this. And Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, we're going to get into this tonight, too. The man Bush calls Mitijano appears tomorrow before a Senate committee. I believe it's Senate. Yeah, Senate committee. The questions, you can assume, will center on torture. And Gonzalez is authorizing it. The recent moves to force out federal attorneys scattered around the country who are not following the Bush crime family's edicts. And until the obviously preemptive move today, why Gonzalez and Bush felt that they could bypass the FISA court and wiretap whomever they want, whenever they want. So what happens today? The sneaky, lying, torture-advocating thug squatting in the Attorney General's office, that would be Gonzalez, announces that he will stop violating the law and once again seek warrants when tapping phones is scheduled for an afternoon of fun and frivolity for the more voyeuristic members of the Bush crime family. What a coincidence, eh? This after Gonzalez and Bush insisted there was no time to get warrants when this criminal activity was made public by the New York Times in November 2005. So what happened to the time crunch, Tejano? That's what you used as an excuse to further break the law. Was that a lie to begin with? Or are they lying now? It has to be one or the other. All of a sudden, you see? And I'll tell you what the difference is. The Democrats control the House and the Senate. The Democrats are calling these sons of bitches in front of committees to ask hard questions that these punk-ass Republicans refuse to ask. And now it's happening. So this thuggish neo-Nazi Tejano of Bush's, Alberto Gonzalez, announces, in a letter to Carl Levin, I believe, sorry, little mistake there. It's only gone on for the past, when did we come into office? We started this in 2001. So, sorry, we're not going to do it anymore. These people have to be impeached. I'm telling you, truth seekers, they have to be impeached. And NBC News tonight made a big deal of the fact that at least 8 Republican senators are joining Democrats to stop Bush's war escalation. ABC, the Disney-owned network, didn't even mention the Republicans, much less the very vocal Chuck Hagel Republican. Of course, ABC has no problem on its radio side either in flooding the airwaves with scum like Limbaugh and Hannity and scores of neo-Nazi hosts scattered across the talk radio dial. But on television, a 22-minute newscast, 2.5 minutes of which they gave over to the fact that Republicans are starting to say, no, we're not going to do this. They don't. ABC doesn't even mention it. Shame on you. Shame on you.
Democrat approach comes down to this. The terrorists win and America loses.
You son of a bitch. You traitorous son of a bitch. How dare you say something like that? God, these people are evil. As far as ABC leaving totally, and Charlie Gibson ought to hang his head in shame. I cannot believe he is the senior editor of that program. And to allow the newscast, all 22 freaking minutes of it today, tonight, to go over the air without mentioning, they use the term Democratic. The Democrats in D.C., the Democrats in Congress are resisting, totally leaves off any reference to Republicans. While their video is running showing Joe Biden, Chuck Hagel, and Carl Levin at the podium. But nowhere do you hear the word Republican. Now, I got an email here from Josh Epstein in New York who says, consider the fact ABC and its parent corporation, the Disney Company, have done the following recently. Recently aired the historically inaccurate miniseries Path to 9/11, which was created by a cadre of conservative filmmakers determined to blame the Clinton administration for not preventing the 9/11 attacks. Employs Mark Halperin as ABC News political director, the same Mark Halperin who last fall in a series of interviews with right-wing media outlets endorsed conservative conspiracy theories that mainstream journalists are overwhelmingly liberal, hate the military, and are blind to their bias and should use the closing weeks of the campaign season to prove their worth to conservatives. ABC let the network online daily newsletter, The Note, run by this freak, Mark Halperin, evolve into a sycophantic outlet of Bush Republican spin. ABC refused to distribute Michael Moore's award, or Disney refused to distribute Michael Moore's award-winning documentary Fahrenheit 9/11 because the company didn't want to be associated with a product so, quote, political, unquote, despite the fact that some ABC-owned talk radio stations and ABC-syndicated radio hosts traffic on an hourly basis in wildly partisan and often off-the-chart hate rhetoric. ABC has given chronic professional fabricator, liar John Stossel a national primetime television platform where his opinions are always aired unopposed. ABC hired Rush Limbaugh as a football analyst only to have to remove this freak from the air after Limbaugh immediately inserted unwanted racial overtones into a broadcast and used bogus reporting, ABC did, to help relentlessly hype the phony Whitewater scandal during the Clinton administration. It's just astonishing. I can't believe the massive failures of media in this country. ABC, you rat bastards, it's just unbelievable, astonishing. I'm getting too cranked, too fast. Let me just share this with you. It came in last night from Sister Jean. I had mentioned about if there are meetings and rallies in your local areas that you want put out on the network here, I'll be happy to do it. We all know about the event coming up January 27th, Saturday. So in the big cities like San Francisco, it really is not necessary to send me information about what's going on in San Francisco or New York or Los Angeles or Detroit, because everybody there knows about it. We're talking about some of the smaller areas where people may be listening to this program via the Internet or via a Sirius satellite radio, and, you know, not in major cities. But I'll share this one with you anyway, because Sister Jean sent it in. There will be a march and rally in San Francisco starting at noon on Saturday, the 27th of January, beginning at the cable car turnaround at Powell and Market Streets. And she mentions the speakers that will be there. She also says, we are reaffirming the identity of San Francisco as a genuine anti-war, pro-labor city with heart and energy and the intellect to see the truth and uphold it. The march will go from downtown San Francisco to the Embarcadero Pier 31 to 33, where the ferry workers have been on strike for several months. And then later on Saturday, the San Francisco Unitarian Church at Franklin and Geary will feature an evening with Dennis Kucinich. And that gathering begins at 7 p.m. So there you have everybody. But everybody in San Francisco knows about this, who needs to know about it. I'm sure they're talking about it on our affiliate there, The Quake. I would think, I guess. All right. We have a break here. When we come back, Kathy is going to play the part of Helen Thomas. I'm going to play the part of Tony Snow. We're not going to try to give it the voice characterizations of these two, but since there is no audio available from today's White House press briefing, which is unheard of, this is the first time that this has happened that I'm aware of. Kathy and I are going to do it for you because I want you to hear this. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, there is no audio anywhere of today's briefing. There is no video anywhere of today's briefing. There was a snippet on the network news tonight filmed by ABC or NBC or CBS camera people. But as far as the usual sources, WhiteHouse.gov, CNN, CNN Pipeline, the public broadcast, C-SPAN, there was no video recorded today, period. So what we have for you is from editor and publisher. They write, at his White House briefing today, Tony Snow faced a grilling over the Democrats' opposition to the president's troop escalation. Tony Snow labeled Senator Hillary Clinton's backing for a cap on troops in Iraq at the current 130,000 as, quote, extreme. Jesus Christ. But he also suggested that war opponents in Congress need to consider what message they're sending in favoring a resolution or a legislation that opposes Bush's surge. The implication was that their opposition in Congress, in the Senate, could be seen as giving Al-Qaeda a green light to expand their actions. See how these son of a bitches operate? The normal function of advice and consent of the Congress, and Gonzalez is attacking the judiciary. We'll get to that tonight, too. The normal function of advice and consent of the Congress is labeled as aiding and abetting the enemy. You don't think these people are interested in turning this country into a dictatorship? I don't give a damn if you're a card-carrying Republican and think Jesus is going to walk over all the corpses to come and rapture your ass up to heaven. Believe that if you want to. But don't you see what's going on here? Tony Snow raised the Al-Qaeda issue again a little bit later in the press conference. Snow said, it's probably worth asking, and I think it was David Gregory who asked a question about linking members of Congress as being supporters of Al-Qaeda. Snow said, quote, it's probably worth asking, what message does Congress intend to give, and who does it think the audience is? Is the audience merely the president? Is it the voting American public? Or in an age of instant communication, is it also Al-Qaeda? Is it Iraq? Is it players in Iraq? You dumb bastard. Nobody's playing in Iraq. That's murder and death and mayhem. Quit trying to act like a pimp. There are no players in Iraq. He goes on to say, is it U.S. troops? Is it people in the Gulf who want to understand whether the United States is, in fact, a partner upon whom they can depend for security, even in trying times? Oh, Jesus. He goes on. All those are questions that deserve to be raised. I don't think there are illegitimate questions. All I'm saying is that these are things that members of the Senate ought to take into consideration, end quote. So a reporter quickly shot back, Tony, by even raising it and saying Al-Qaeda is, I mean, aren't you saying that members of Congress are somehow aiding and the enemy? And then Snow gave one of his weaselly denials. But yesterday, you see, he was asked point blank, Tony, just to be clear, do you believe that a non-binding resolution that opposes a troop increase, does that provide comfort to the enemy? And his answer yesterday, I don't know. My God. Now, another highlight was the following exchange between Snow and Helen Thomas. It started when she asked whether the U.S. should sponsor a referendum in Iraq to find out if the people there actually want us to stick around. Several polls have suggested that most Iraqis do not. Most means more than half. Now, we're going to do the exchange, and we're not going to try to do the voice characterizations here, but Kathy is going to do, just to keep it clear, Kathy's going to do Helen Thomas, I'll do Tony Snow.
Would the administration agree to a referendum in Iraq to see what the people really want?
No.
Why?
The federal constitution does not permit for such referenda.
Why? We're a conqueror. We should be asking the people, do they really want us there?
Helen.
Yes, sir.
Do you believe, well, no, you will scold me for asking a question, so I will not. I will phrase my question in the form of an answer.
You know, best defense is offense. Is that your whole approach?
No, my...
I'm asking you a very...
No, my approach is to, well, you're asking a simple question that actually has some fairly complex precedents in the terms of the advisability or possibility of a national...
You keep saying they want us there.
Helen.
Put it to a test.
Helen, no war is popular. No war is popular.
That's not the answer.
If you had done... No, that is an absolutely accurate answer.
Nobody wants.
If you had asked in 1864, I'll go to the Civil War, the referendum would have failed and Abraham Lincoln would have failed.
How do you know that?
Go back and read. Just a little history will tell you.
Who won the war?
You had Republican senators trooping up to the White House telling the president that he needed to cut a separate deal, that he needed to dispatch emissaries to speak with Jefferson Davis and his heirs and assigns.
The Civil War?
Well, I'm just telling you. I'm trying to make the larger point, and it is getting sort of ludicrous about the fact that wars are, of course, unpopular. But the important thing to understand...
A referendum is ludicrous?
No, I'm saying that when we get too deep into historic analogies, but if you'll permit me to finish an answer, I'll let you ask a follow-up question. The point here is that the president understands that a war is unpopular. He also understands that it's necessary. And you can frame questions in a lot of ways. If you did a referendum to say, will America, do you want to succeed in Iraq? Do you want democracy in Iraq? Would you like terror on your shores? Do you believe that Al-Qaeda wishes to kill Americans? And if it does, do you want to fight them there or here?
Do you want an American military occupation in Iraq? That's the question.
Okay, well, you may ask it. Thank you. You see how these bastards operate, this Tony Snow? She starts out with a simple question. Excuse me. Would the Bush administration agree to a referendum in Iraq to see what the people really want? And at the very end, after all that, Tony Snow says the point here is that the president understands that a war is unpopular. I guess he means to the Iraqis, the Americans. Who's he referring to? Then Snow says he also understands that it's necessary. Why is it necessary? What the Christ? We've executed everybody that had anything to do with the Saddam Hussein regime. We've totally overthrown the government. We've put in a puppet government. The war rages on. What the hell is he talking about? The war is unpopular. He understands that it's necessary. It's necessary if you are a greedy, right-wing, psychopath, sociopathic thug like George Bush and his cronies. Then it's necessary. And then this rat bastard says, and you can frame questions in a lot of ways, Helen. Like if you did a referendum to Americans, like, do you want to succeed in Iraq? Do you want democracy in Iraq? Would you like terror on your shores? Do you believe that Al-Qaeda wishes to kill Americans? And if it does, do you want to fight them here or there? You see what they do? And that's the party line. That's what the pig man Limbaugh, this bloated ass, and Sean Hannity, and Hugh Hewitt, and the rest of these right-wing pissants do on American radio all day long. My God. Meanwhile, Alberto Gonzalez, while he issues an order within the past 36 hours saying, okay, we'll go ahead and go back to getting the warrants. He says now, in an address to the American Enterprise Institute, he says that federal judges are unqualified to make rulings affecting national security policy. No federal judge has ever made a ruling affecting national security policy. Even I know that. What the federal judges rule on is the constitutionality of laws jammed down the throats of the American public by the Bush crime family, not by Congress. Gonzalez isn't referring to anything Congress has done. The Republican Congress for the past 6 years has been nothing more than a rubber stamp for these Nazis, because every single Republican is either a Nazi or supports them by being a Republican. Yeah, that includes Olympia Snow and Chuck Hagel. Sorry, if you liberal Republicans don't want to be tagged as a Nazi sympathizer, then get the hell out of the party. So, judges are unqualified to make rulings affecting national security policy, Gonzalez says. He says that judges also should defer to the will of the Congress and the will of the president when deciding national security cases. Defer to the will of the president? The Congress? This is a co-equal branch of government. If the Congress passes a law that is unconstitutional, Gonzalez is saying that the judges should sit down, shut up, and support the unconstitutionality. These bastards want everybody in government to be as criminal as they are. This is astonishing stuff. This is the Attorney General of the United States, the chief law enforcement officer, instructing judges, a co-equal branch of government,
that they may not interpret the constitutionality of law. Son of a bitch!
It's about 10 before the hour. So back to Gonzalez. The speech was delivered, I think, today by Gonzalez to the American Enterprise Institute, a nest of right-wing thuggery, if ever such a nest existed. In addition to declaring, this little pissant declaring that the judiciary is no longer an equal partner in the tripartite government we have here. They've already declared that Congress is useless, worthless, and it has been because it's been dominated by these filthy Republicans. But now Gonzalez is saying that the judiciary has no business ruling on the constitutionality, in other words, the legality of whatever a rubber stamp Congress passes or whatever edict comes out of the mouth of this little twit in the White House, or the people puppeteering him. The speech also outlined in part what qualifies, or I should say what qualities, the Bush administration looks for when selecting nominees for the federal bench. Now, several times over the past 6 years, you've seen these cowardly, spineless Democrats in Congress refuse to block nominations of judges to the Supreme Court, or in most instances, even judges to the federal district courts. Spineless rat bastard Democrats have added to an already right-wing judiciary by allowing Bush's neo-Nazi candidates, dozens of them, and two to the Supreme Court to be confirmed. So here it is. This is what qualifies someone to be a federal judge in the Bush administration. Quote, "We want to determine whether he understands the inherent limits that make an unelected judiciary inferior to Congress or the president in making policy judgments. That, for example, a judge will never be in the best position to know what is in the national security interests of our country," end quote. Now, he's playing games here, see? And he knows he can get away with it in front of the Nazis at the American Enterprise Institute. But he's playing word games. Gonzalez went on. He didn't cite any specific activist jurists. They never do. Or give examples of national security cases. They never do. But consider this. The Tejano's Justice Department is appealing a decision last August by a district judge in Detroit, Anna Diggs Taylor. Remember this? Who ruled that the government's warrantless surveillance program is unconstitutional and ordered it stopped immediately. You remember that? And Gonzalez appealed her decision to the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati, a nest of neo-Nazis if ever one existed. And the 6th Court Circuit ruled that the administration can keep the program in place during the appeal. And then, wonder of wonders, it just automatically stopped today. Because Gonzalez is to be questioned tomorrow. In addition to Judge Anna Diggs Taylor's ruling, attorneys representing terrorism suspects held at Gitmo are challenging the legality of a law signed by Bush in October that authorizes military trials. Now, those challenges raise the possibility that trials will be struck down by a federal appeals court or the Supreme Court. So that's why Gonzalez, this Nazi little rapist, constitutional rapist, why he is out there
saying to the Nazis in the American Enterprise Institute, no, judges can't do that. Judges are to do what we, by Christ, tell them to do. Does this half-wit not understand that the federal judiciary is the third and equal branch of government? Of course he understands it, but they don't care. I'm telling you, not you, because you know it. But the people out there who don't know it, these people are fascist. They are utterly and absolutely fascist. And yes, they are national socialists. They are. Socialism for the corporations, misery for the average American. These are national socialists, exactly in the mold of the Hitlerians. Trust me. No, don't trust me. Make your own decision. And then Gonzalez says, judges who apply what he calls an activist philosophy, and that's always right-wingers. It's never left-wingers. What left-wing or liberal or Democrats do when they're in the federal judiciary is they interpret the law. So who in the hell is he talking about here? But he says judges who apply an activist philosophy that stretches the law to suit policy preferences actually reduce the credibility and authority of the judiciary. In Gonzalez's warped, freaked out mind, Gonzalez says, in so doing, they undermine the rule of law. Do you hear that? If you interpret the law as you, as a federal judge, are required by the Constitution to do, that's all federal judges do, is make decisions based on the rule of law, the rule of federal law, federal statute, or the Constitution. That's all they do. And this fellow traveler of George Bush's, this swinish Alberto Gonzalez, is now stating categorically, he's not raising the issue, he's stating it for the record. Judges need to sit down, shut the hell up, and stay out of the business of the imperial presidency. Now you understand, don't you, truth seeker, and perhaps you already did, why there's an effort around the country to fire federal prosecutors, federal attorneys, because they're the ones that bring these cases that the judges rule on. That's why they're being gotten rid of. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I got an email here over the break from Karen, who wants me to re-announce what I said about San Francisco. She says she, like a lot of people, are just too busy working. And even though she only lives a couple hours from San Francisco, she didn't know about the event. Okay, here it is again, Karen, and anyone else. A march and rally in San Francisco starting at noon this Saturday, or not this Saturday, but January 27th. That's the day of the massive demonstration planned in D.C. and around the country. So in San Francisco, noon, January 27th, beginning at the cable car turnaround at Powell and Market Streets. The speakers will include Angela Davis, Jorge Hirsch, who is the stepmother of Lieutenant Aaron Watada, local union organizers, war resistors, local city supervisors, activists, representatives from many organizations. And the person who sent me this, Sister Jean, said, we are reaffirming the identity of San Francisco as a genuine anti-war, pro-labor city with heart and energy and the intellect to see the truth
and uphold it. The march will go from downtown San Francisco to the Embarcadero Pier 31-33, where the ferry workers have been on strike for several months. And then later on that night, Karen, and anyone else, Dennis Kucinich will be speaking at the San Francisco Unitarian Church at the corner of Franklin and Geary. Okay? You got it? Okay. One more email here, and then back to what we've got on the menu. This is from Mickey, who writes, Mike, I understand that Saudi Arabia is willing to commit troops to Iraq. Call me crazy, but it ignited this line of thought. Bush doesn't have the troops to threaten Iran. Saudi Arabia comes in to install a new government, another Sunni government, in Iraq. Coincidentally, Mickey writes, Saudis are Sunni. The deal is this. Saudi Arabia dominates the region's oil, with the U.S. as a partner to keep the peace. The Saudis provided the hijackers. The Saudis spawned bin Laden. They make this deal now. George gets Iraq out of the way before Saddam starts. Not Saddam, he's dead. Before the Iraq government starts trading in euros and joins the anti-U.S. movement. Now Bush has made an example, and the OPEC agreement of 1971 to trade oil only in dollars is maintained. So, Saudis pay the debt of the war. Halliburton makes a killing, then invests the blood money back into the Mideast. Saudis get rich from dominating the oil market as Iran is destabilized. Europe plays Oliver Twist. Please, may I have some more? While the partnership of Saudi royalty and oil companies utilizes taxpayer money to make a huge gain and dominate the oil market strategically. If you wonder why people would do something like that, it's simply to have the status of having made the biggest heist in history. With a twisted artwork of lies and cover-ups that makes them smile and feel proud in their evil hearts. They must be stopped. I just had to scream this somewhere. Mickey. Yeah, there's an awful lot of silence coming out of Saudi Arabia. And they have bailed Bush's ass out of everything that he has ever gotten into that required a bailout, which is damn near everything. They have bailed out the old man. They have bailed out so many people connected to the Bush crime family. The Bush crime family and the Saudi royal family are like white on rice. You cannot get daylight between them. So Mickey may be right. One other item here. There's news all over the place that cancer deaths in this country are down. For the first time in who knows how long, cancer deaths are down. Now, there are several reasons for it, and some of the newscasts over the course of the last 24 hours have tried to explain the reasons. Increased use of diagnostic tests to find these lesions or polyps or cancers while they're still treatable. Reduction in smoking. There's just a whole list of reasons. It's my understanding that when this news came out from the National Cancer Institute or the National Institutes of Health or whomever in the past 24 hours, Bush tried to take credit for it. That his administration had increased funding, blah, blah, blah. You want to know the truth? The truth, Dr. Tim Johnson, who happened to be on that lying goddamn ABC network tonight, but Dr. Tim Johnson was on there today, and when Charlie, what's his name, the anchor, asked Dr. Tim if that was correct, should the Bush crime family or should the Bush administration take credit, Dr. Tim Johnson, who is conservative, he makes no bones about it, said no. He practically called Bush a liar. What Tim Johnson said is that the increase in money that Bush claims is his is a result of legislation passed and money allocated during the Clinton years that went on up until last year, 2005, at which point the Bush crime family cut funding. Cut it. Cut it. And this rat bastard stands out there and tries to take credit for it. Now,
This is where it was reported, where? I don't know. On the news that cancer deaths are down for the second straight year, the Bush administration is touting its role in increasing the cancer research budget. According to a fact sheet issued by the White House today, federal funding to fight cancer has been on the rise. Cancer researchers tell a different story. Dr. Bruce Chabner, clinical director of the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, quote, "I am a member of the National Cancer Advisory Board and deeply involved in these budget debates. While no final budget is available for 2007, it is likely there will be no increase. The budget will be flat. The key effects are on funding of grants. The pay line for grants will be at an all-time historic low." Dr. Len Zwelling, vice president for research administration, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center, quote, "To be short and sweet, the pay line for National Institute of Health funding is going further down. And the grants that are getting funded are being cut drastically. There simply is not enough money going toward research at a time when progress is so likely. It is a real tragedy, and academic centers must find alternate ways to fund research, and they are not easy to find." Now, when you see us, I heard that today about Bush taking credit, and I thought, wait a second, this son of a bitch gets no credit for anything except destroying the country, ruining the military, destroying the environment, slashing funding for education, health, research, the arts. Pick any area. The government funding is almost a necessity. And don't even go around stem cell research. And I thought, no, this can't be. Bush doesn't get any credit for this. He hasn't done anything. He's done nothing. And it turns out that that's a fact. But he stands up and tries to take credit for it. What kind of a person does that? The same kind of a person who says, "I hug the moms, it's hard being president. You know, we live in a time of war, and I have to hug the moms and the dads and thank them for their son's life and guts and arms and legs and eyes and head and everything, because war's hell and getting oil is even heller." Son of a bitch. New York Times today on the business page, what $1.2 trillion can buy. Did you see that? The writer David Leonhardt says the human mind isn't very well equipped to make sense of a figure like $1.2 trillion. He says, it all starts to sound the same when you talk about millions, billions, and trillions. And that's true. That's why newscasters always say 14 billion with a B. Right? You ever notice that? Well, let me share with you when we come back what David Leonhardt said today, because it's muy interesante or whatever. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Decisions on some things that I think are true. One, I believe there's an Almighty.
about 22 past the hour. All right, $1.2 trillion. What can it buy? Oh, my God. First of all, that's what the writer at New York Times in the business page today, David Lenhart, he said the way to come to grips with it is what the number $1.2 trillion means. Forget about the number itself and think about what you could buy with the money. And he says when you do that, a trillion stops sounding anything like millions or billions. Millions and billions are just chump change when you get up to trillion. He writes, for starters, $1.2 trillion would pay for an unprecedented public health campaign, a doubling of cancer research funding, treatment for every American whose diabetes or heart disease is now going unmanaged, and a global immunization campaign to save millions of children's lives. Combined, the cost of running those programs for a decade wouldn't use up even half of $1.2 trillion. So, we could then turn to poverty and education, starting with universal preschool for every 3- and 4-year-old in the country. The city of New Orleans could also receive a huge increase in reconstruction funds. And the final big chunk of the money could go to national security. The recommendations of the 9/11 Commission that have not been put in place, like better baggage and cargo screening, stronger measures against nuclear proliferation, all could be enacted. Financing for the war in Afghanistan could be increased to beat back the Taliban's gains, and a peacekeeping force could put a stop to the genocide in Darfur. All that, and there's more, but all that would be a way to spend $1.2 trillion. Here would be another, the war in Iraq. In the days before the war, almost 5 years ago, the Pentagon estimated it would cost $50 billion. Democratic staff members in Congress largely agreed. Well, why not? Everything was a lie. Lawrence Lindsay, a White House economic advisor, was a bit more realistic, predicting that the costs could go as high as $200 billion, and Bush fired him for saying so. Now, those estimates, $50 billion, $200 billion, probably would have turned out to be too optimistic even if the war had gone well. Throughout history, people have typically underestimated the cost of a war. But the deteriorating situation in Iraq has caused the initial predictions to be off the mark by a scale that is difficult to fathom. The operation itself, the helicopters, the tanks, the fuel needed to run them, the combat pay for enlisted troops, the salaries of reservists and contractors, the rebuilding of Iraq, all of it is costing more than $300 million a day. That translates into a couple of billion dollars a week, and over the course of a year, an eventual total of $700 billion in direct spending, over the full course of the war, $700 billion in direct spending. Now, besides the direct military spending, the gas tax that the war has effectively imposed on American families. At the start of 2003, a barrel of oil was selling for $30. Since then, the average price has been about $50. Attributing even $5 of this difference to the Iraq war adds another $150 billion to the war's price tag, and that comes out of our pockets. The war has also guaranteed some big future expenses, replacing the hardware used in Iraq, and otherwise getting the U.S. military back into its pre-war fighting shape could cost $100 billion. And if this war's veterans receive disability payments and medical care at the same rate as veterans of the first Gulf War, their health costs will add up to $250 billion. If the disability rate matches Vietnam's, the number climbs higher. Either way, it's like a miniature Medicare. In economic terms, you can think of these medical costs as the difference between how productive the soldiers would have been had they not been sent to Iraq as computer programmers or firefighters, and how productive they will be as wounded veterans. Whatever number you use for the war's total cost, it will tower over costs that normally seem prohibitive. Right now, including everything, the war is costing about $200 billion a year. Treating heart disease and diabetes, by contrast, would probably cost about $50 billion a year, a fourth of the war cost. The remaining 9/11 Commission recommendations held up in Congress might cost somewhat less. Universal preschool would be $35 billion.
In Afghanistan, $10 billion could make a real difference. At the National Cancer Institute, annual budget is about $6 billion. Now, Bush is asking for $20 billion for his surge. $20 billion is not a bad ballpark estimate for the added cost of Mr. Bush's planned surge in troops. But whatever else might be accomplished with the $20 billion, it would be nice this time to have a discussion about it before the troops reach Iraq. Six before the hour. All right, I want you to hear two sound bites now. The first is from Senator Carl Levin from the bipartisan Senate press conference announcing their resolution to block Bush's war escalation. The second is from Chuck Hagel, same conference. Let's listen to Levin first. Hagel, Biden, and Levin held this conference today to announce their intention to put forth a bipartisan resolution, non-binding, has no power, no teeth in it, but it's a start, to block Bush's absolute power now, they've claimed for themselves, to kill Americans, to kill Iraqis, and to piss on the American public. At least eight Republican senators now openly oppose Bush's insane plan. That's not something to be celebrated. That's something to cause Americans to grieve. Only eight out of 49? You mean there are 41 of these filthy, disgusting Republican senators who support this son of a bitch? How many of them have their sons and daughters involved? Huh? How many of them? Carl Levin begins.
The message that more troops would send, the message that deeper military involvement would send, is that somehow or other it is in our hands what their fate in Iraq is, where the message needs to be now, after all these years, that the only way the violence will end in Iraq is if the political leaders of Iraq step up and reach the political compromises that are so essential if Iraq is going to end this spiral of violence that it is now in. Iraq's own Prime Minister Maliki said this just a few weeks ago, that the crisis is political. And the ones who can stop the cycle of aggravation and bloodletting of innocents are the Iraqi politicians. This resolution, in addition to saying that we do not support increased troops, deeper military involvement, also calls for the transition of our military mission to a more limited one of training, counterterrorism, and protecting the territorial integrity of Iraq. It also calls for the greater engagement of other countries in the region in the stabilization and reconstruction of Iraq.
Now, the only thing about that that makes me just a tad nervous is the greater engagement of other countries in the region. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt. These are all Sunni-dominated countries. I don't know. But with so many different members of Congress coming forth with alternative plans, it's going to be hard for the Bush crime family to logically continue to claim the Democrats have no alternative plan for Iraq. It'll be hard for them, but they'll still do it. These sons of bitches don't care a thing about reality. Today, Hillary Clinton and Evan Bayh suggested a cap to troop levels and funding restrictions based on Iraqis meeting certain benchmarks. Looks like Congress, under the control of the Democrats, or the Senate at least, is finally trying to tell this bastard in the White House that they are co-equal branch of government. Hagel made a statement and then answered a reporter's question that other senators accuse him of just playing politics and not really supporting the Democratic Party's position. The reporter asked, Senator Hagel, already one of your colleagues, Senator Cornyn of Texas, has come out this morning and said that, quote, this is nothing more than a political ploy, end quote. He says that what you are trying to do will, quote, send the wrong message, end quote. He said this shows a lack of seriousness on your part, Senator Hagel, and there's a suggestion that you don't understand the consequences of failure in Iraq. I wonder if you would react to that.
I am a bit befuddled by what the Texas senator is trying to describe. This is a serious resolution put forth by serious people who care about our country. There is no moral high ground that one group of senators has over the other. If there is a disagreement on policy, that's what a democracy is about.
But not a dictatorship.
It is not in the interest of our country and our future and the consequences of our country for us to be mute. We are not only failing our country and our constituency, but we're failing the Constitution of the United States.
Yee-hee!
There should be strong, passionate disagreement. But for one, as I have said many times, I will do everything I can to stop the president's policy as he outlined it on Wednesday night. I think it is dangerously irresponsible to continue to put American lives in the middle of a clearly defined tribal sectarian civil war is wrong.
Yeah, literally in the middle. Not metaphorically speaking, literally in the middle. That's what Bush wants to do. Embed American soldiers in a death struggle in another nation's civil war. Osama bin Laden, if that rat bastard is still alive, must be just absolutely ecstatic. It must be orgasmic for him. Not only did his operative succeed in killing 3,000 people on U.S. soil, if you believe the official story, he got Bush to kill another 3,000 Americans. He got Bush to maim tens of thousands more. He got Bush to bring al-Qaeda to Iraq. And he got Bush to destabilize, he got Bush to overthrow and execute Saddam Hussein, one of Osama bin Laden's blood enemies. All of this Bush has done for Osama bin Laden, a member of the family that used to be business partners with the Bush crime family. Son of a bitch. I can't believe this. What can't you believe, Malloy? I can't believe that we, the American people, are sitting on our asses instead of demanding that this guy get out of town. You put 10 million Americans in the streets right now, and trust me, it would give some spine to Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate to remove this son of a bitch. Let me tell you something. 2 years from now, every single member of the House is up for re-election, as they always are every 2 years. But more importantly, there are 22 Republican senators up for re-election in 08. 22 of them. Now, if we already have 10 or 12 who are willing to go to the mat with this psychopathic killer in the White House, and if we could convince the other 22, that would be about 35 Republicans. Coupled with 51 Democrat Republicans, and the son of a bitch has just been found guilty in a trial in the Senate. That's how close we are. Bush is not going to stop. Gonzalez is not going to stop. Cheney is not going to stop. Gates is not going to stop. None of these people are going to stop. Nothing will make them stop. Not the Iraqis, not the Americans, not the Congress, not the military, not public opinion, nothing. We put 10 million people in the streets in America, which is what percentage? 3.5% of the population of this country. Jesus Christ. I'll bet we can't even do that. But if we could just get, look, if 70% of the American public do not support this bastard anymore, that's 210 million of us. If we could just get 10% of that 70% 21 million people into the streets. That's all. And that's still only about 7 or 8% of the total population of this country. Then it would give spine and courage and guts and backbone to the Democratic senators and the Republican senators. It also would give some spine to all the Democrats in the House. Screw the Republicans in the House. The Republicans in the House are nothing but a bunch of 10-cent thugs, liars, sneaks, thieves, and cowards. So that's all we have to do. That's all we have to do. All we have to do is get between 10 and 20 million people in the streets of this country on January 27th. If that's the day, then by God, let's do it. If the weather's bad, let's do it February 27th. If the weather's bad, let's do it March 27th, April 27th, May 27th, June 27th, July 27th, until finally we can get our country back. My God! Don't you see what's going on here? Of course you do. I know you do. I'm screaming out of my head here tonight. I'm just absolutely, with the federal prosecutors resigning, two of them in California, U.S. attorneys in California announced their stepping down. One of them is the prosecutor that went after that scummy, filthy Randy Duke Cunningham. The Republican congressman who pled guilty to taking almost $3 million in bribes. What Gonzalez and Bush, they are demanding that these federal prosecutors get out of town. And some of them are just saying, there's no way I can fight this. And they're leaving. We've got to get these people out of office.
Is there And if all our good intentions simply pave the road to hell, are the parking lots their fate?
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Oh man, we're getting way behind. Jesus, it's 10 before the hour. This is from Greg. Hi, Mike. Just want to take a moment to tell you about a demonstration Friday here in Sacramento starting at about 3:30 or 4 p.m. this Friday. Cindy Sheehan will be here as well. It'll be held at 16th and Broadway across from the Tower Theater just off, people know where this is, 16th and Broadway across from the Tower Theater. I think I mentioned this. There's a party afterwards, too. But anyway, Greg writes, and we could use a Bay Area presence, too. Please give it a big plug. We could use it. People can go to sacramentofordemocracy.org for more information. Kelly in Springfield, Illinois wrote in, Mike, I have a pretty cynical opinion as to why George Bush is so willing to escalate this war as he is doing to the point of provoking and threatening Iran, and against the advice of nearly everyone who has an opinion, including 80% of the American people. You see, in order to save his asinine legacy and not be viewed as a completely incompetent fool in the history books until the end of time, he needs an out. And this is his brilliant exit strategy. He forces Congress to vote to not fund this ludicrous war anymore. And then when all hell breaks loose in Iraq, he can start pointing fingers at the Democrats and Congress and blame them. When more of our troops and innocent Iraqi citizens go down in a bloody, chaotic mess. This lying bastard knows this scenario is going to play out regardless, so why not have someone else to blame when it does happen? He's being extremely unreasonable, even for him, but I do believe this is his sick plan, and it was probably Karl Rove's brainstorm. Kelly in Springfield. I wouldn't be surprised. Who knows what kind of madness floats out as policy decisions or strategic decisions from the minds of people like Stalin, Hitler, Mao, Pol Pot, George Bush, Augusto Pinochet, Fulgencio Batista, Anastasio Somoza. You know, who knows? Idi Amin. Who knows? P.W. Botha. Who knows what kind of sickness, madness in the minds of these kinds of global tyrants, dictators, madmen. Who knows what process comes produces these kinds of policy decisions? The commonality among all these people is they care not a goddamn about human life. Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Human lives are merely a means to an end, the end being whatever their power-mad, bloodlust objective happens to be. Bush, Pol Pot, Mao, they're all the same. It's a matter of degrees. If Bush could sentence 50 million people to die the way Stalin did, or Mao, he would do it. He's an amoral son of a bitch who has no respect for human life whatsoever. Every single decision this man has made screams, I have no respect for human life. None! And I challenge anyone to refute that. I've asked so many times on this program. I understand why right-wingers don't call here. They're terrified. They wet their pants if they try to call here. But I challenge anyone to come up with anything, any decision that Bush has made that has been pro-life, pro-America, pro-common people like you and me, pro-middle-class, working-class, pro-environment, pro-law, pro-decency, pro-morality, one single decision. You can't do it. Too many things converged in the past couple of days for my little head to handle. That's the reason for the outrage tonight. I just when I heard today about this filthy pig who runs the Justice Department, Bush's Tejano, has decided, oh, okay, we can get the warrants because he's got an appearance to make before a Senate committee tomorrow. I just about lost it. I spit my oatmeal all over the kitchen wall today. Molly looked at me like, Jesus, I usually do that. What are you doing? Yeah, I'm sitting there reading the Times in the morning, having breakfast, as is my habit. Drinking a nice cup of green tea and eating oatmeal with raisins in it. With Molly. This morning was Kathy's morning to sleep in. She gets 1 out of 9. So we're sitting there, Molly and me, and I see that story. Oh, okay. Well, we're going to go back to doing the warrants. We've decided that everything we told you a year and 3 months ago was just an utter lie. Boy, I almost said the BS word there. Am I allowed to? I can't say that, can I? Okay. It was just an utter lie. Everything we told you in November 05, that when the New York Times finally, after holding the story for a year, bastards, finally published the fact that we, we surveil people's telephone calls, millions upon millions of you dumb turkeys out there. And the really good stuff, we record, we have the Naval Intelligence Office or National Security Office record some of the really freaky stuff, and then Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest of us sit around and listen to this stuff at night. Anyway, we decided, okay, we'll go back to getting warrants. Now, what we told you back in November of 05, there was no time. Oh, the terrorists were quick. Oh, we can't do this. Oh, the power rests with the president. Oh, take it all back. Take it all back. Do over. Take it all back. Oh, by the way, I have to go testify tomorrow in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So, I just don't want them to hammer me on this one. You understand, don't you? And besides, I'm Bush's Tejano. So it really doesn't matter, does it? Screw you people. I'm the Attorney General. I'll do what I goddamn please. And so will Bush. And so will Cheney. And so will the rest of us. And if you don't like it, leave the country. We don't want you here anyway. Get out of here. Don't you know Jesus is coming back? Get out of here. Get out of here. You're not Americans. You're scum.
We are the only true Americans!
decided that we're really not to blame for the love that's deep inside us now. It's still the same. And the sound we make together is the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down for me now. Feel alive. Listen to the tide slowly turning.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Okay, I have three emails here, very quick, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. 800-989-1480 is the number here. This is from the person signs your listener, Ming. Hi, Mike. You need to check some facts about Mao. Probably you... All right, let me put it this way. I'll read it the way the writer intended it. It's obviously somebody to whom English is a second language, and I don't want to embarrass this person. So, hi, Mike, you need to check some facts about Mao. Probably you have been brainwashed. You even don't know it. If someone doesn't, if someone isn't in favor to American corporations, they will be demonized. Mao had done great things for China, for Chinese people, and not for American corporations, so he is demonized as murderer. So you really believe those stories. I hope you do some homework for that. Thank you, Truth Seeker, your listener, Ming. All I can say to you, Ming, is, you know, I've been alive. I've been alive probably longer than you have. And I understand Mao pretty well and what he did to the Chinese people. So, Ming, with all due respect, piss off, okay? You are the one who has been brainwashed. You know, that rotten son of a bitch is responsible for the deaths of tens of millions of people. Go away, Ming. You know, you obviously, if you're writing from this country, you're apparently here for an education or to make some money, whatever. Good for you. But don't call or write this program and correct me on your history of Mao. Okay? Don't even try. Don't even try. Now, blow off. I don't want any more emails from you. I need to check my history on Mao. Oh, bite me. Regarding my plea for millions of people in the street, Reg writes in, the media would not cover the protests. They'd ignore or underreport the numbers. The TV networks would not photograph the protests. As in the past, it would be a waste of time unless we marched on the headquarters of the corporate media. When and if that happens, I'll once again be in the street. Until then, it's a lost cause. Well, we can... disagree agreeably, Reg. I get your point, though. And CNN, you know, CNN is safe. It's here in Atlanta, Georgia. You couldn't get 1,000 war protesters together in this. Man, I've come real close tonight to saying some bad words. In this suck up state, you just couldn't do it. The 500 that show up religiously are hardcore dedicated. Progressive liberal Democrat activists, some of them not even liberal. They're just Democratic activists. But you couldn't get 1,000 people in the entire state of Georgia. This is Redneck'sville, okay? And patriotic country fan writes, the media would say, the media wouldn't say 21 million people showed up. They would say only 21 people marched. No kidding. They're little right-wing freaks. And then this, I got to read this to you, and then your phone calls. Dear Mike, every time we get a Republican president in office, they pull the same exact stuff. They break the law, subvert it, empty the public coffers by giving to the rich through stealing from the poor. They always lie their heads off, and they always are responsible for the nation's biggest, most infamous scandals. Nixon, Watergate, Reagan, Iran-Contra, Bush 1, where do we start? Columbia, bank failures that broke our backs, but save the rich, Noriega, who in classic Republican arrogant moronitude they called the pineapple. There are no lower class self-adulating worthless thugs on the planet than Republicans. Rush Limbaugh is a classic Republican. He epitomizes the shame they bring to this entire nation. Republicans are rabid racist, sexist, homophobes, and pedophiles. They are morally corrupt, spiritually demented, and the ultimate hypocrites. Republicans believe the ends justify the means only when it is they who subvert the law for profit. Republicans are the rapists of this country. Republicans are bullies, brutes, and cowards with immature emotional and psychological traits. They are stingy as they are greedy. They hate people for the suffering they themselves cause and blame them for their own fates. Republicans want fascism. They always have. They know they are evil-hearted freaks that would never be accepted if they were open about their sick philosophy. That is why they use force for everything they do. Whether it's lying, cheating, stealing, word games, cover-ups, or straight-up violence, it all boils down to using force to subvert the will of others. They are criminals. Every Republican president has pulled exactly the same filthy tricks attempting to grab imperial power. They get hysterical the second they don't get their way, and the dirty false accusations fly like bullets. They resemble Hitler for good reason. Many supported him and believe in bringing back the Third Reich. Republicans are Nazis. I hate even talking about them. They nauseate me to the core. Other than that, things are great. Angie. Well, I'm glad to see a few people are as freaked out and pissed off as I am tonight. Ah! All right, as promised, phone calls. Will's been holding on for 2 hours. Will, welcome to the program.
Hey,
thanks,
Mike,
for your patience. Hi.
Today is the anniversary of the start of Operation Desert Storm. And since I participated in that misadventure, I thought I'd call in to express my thoughts.
16 years ago?
Yep.
Good God, that's right. 91, that's right. Man. So it's been 16 years that we, the United States, and whoever else was along for the ride, punished and brutalized the people in Iraq.
The punishment has never stopped.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You know, killing Saddam and killing his brother, a half-brother, and killing his terror judge, big freaking deal. That means nothing. The United States put more hell on the people of Iraq than Saddam ever did. And that's the truth. I don't think Saddam ever littered the countryside with depleted uranium.
Actually, he did.
Well, he did?
Yes.
Depleted uranium?
There are several armies in the world that use depleted uranium munitions, not just the United States.
Well, but I mean, he wasn't using the army in his own country, was he? He might have hit the Iranians with depleted uranium. Well, maybe the Kurds. I don't know. But anyway, 16 years doesn't seem possible. Time just rushes by when you're having fun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I went into that war supporting it, and I came out opposing all war because of what I saw, and I'll continue to oppose war until the day I die.
I hear you. I think people who have actually been in combat, unless there is some other psychodrama at work, people who have been in combat don't ever want to see it again and don't believe it makes any sense. You know, I think about all the people I've known, like you, who have been in a combat situation and say basically the same thing. And then you work your way up the chain, the non-coms and the junior officers, and then into the mid-level officers, all the way up to somebody like Dwight Eisenhower.
Yeah, what we call the REMS.
REMS?
Yeah, Rear Echelon MF. You know what MF stands for?
Oh, real Rear Echelon MF, like Frank. Yeah, I got you. Okay. All right, what else you got, Will?
That's it.
All right, what's going on in Lansing on the 27th?
Actually, on the 26th. We are paying visits to the local offices of all our congressional representatives, and, you know, senators and our local congressmen.
That's a Friday. And when are you doing that, and how do people find out about it?
It starts at noon on Friday. We're going to be meeting in front of the state capitol building like we usually do on Fridays. And from there, we're going to the local congressional offices.
All right, so people who live in anywhere near the Lansing, Michigan area, or if you don't, if you live in Michigan, join Will and the other people who have been protesting religiously, to turn a phrase, for a couple of years against this rat bastard in the White House.
Actually, we've been doing the weekly vigils since right after 9/11.
Oh my God! All right, all right. Well, join Will at the state capitol on Friday the 26th. Will, got to go. Thanks for checking in, pal.
Thanks.
I believe that it's very important for people to be to listen. Therefore, I'm a person who does a lot of my work in private.
I like the one where he says, "I don't want you reading my stuff." Well, what was the first part of that, Kathy?
I don't email. Cause I don't want you reading my personal stuff.
Oh, that's right, son of a bitch. A.E. writes in, the subject line, the world will not forgive or forget. Mike, in a nation which is invaded by a foreign army whose leader attempts to enforce an unacceptable political system and is willing to kill millions to do it, the people of that nation have a right to resist with all their might. If the leader was named Hitler and the nation, any of the European nations invaded during World War II, who would deny the right to resist invasion? A corollary to this is we remember Hans and Sophie Scholl not just because of their bravery, but because of their rarity among the German people of their time. Modern Germans voice the shame they feel for parents and grandparents who allowed Hitler to rise to power and stay in power. Neither modern Germans nor anyone else of the modern age will forgive nor forget the silence of Hitler-era Germans. Hans and Sophie Scholl, of course, being the brother and sister who put together White Rose Society and were executed by the Germans for doing so, the college students. Yeah, a nation which is invaded by a foreign army have a right to resist. Yeah, it puts us in the weird position, although I don't know why it should be weird, of criticizing our own military. You know, these soldiers didn't ask to go there. But they do have the power to notify Congress, and they are doing so, a certain number of them, a petition of grievance to notify Congress that they disagree with what's going on. They have the right to do that, and in this case, the obligation. Why should these young men and young women be put into a situation by George Bush or Robert Gates or Dick Cheney or any of these rotten, rancid sons of bitches where their lives are going to be pissed away into the desert sands of Iraq? Why should these Americans have to suffer that and their families? Why? Why? What are we fighting for? What are they fighting for? Because Bush has made it clear that he wants us to go shopping while he plays soldier boy, general boy, or whatever the hell he thinks he is, commander-in-chief boy. What are these soldiers fighting for? What? Bush's vanity, his arrogance, his greed, and the fact that he's a louse. He's an absolute amoral louse. He has to be removed from office, legally and peacefully. He has to be. He has to be. We're not going to make it through another 2 years with this evil bastard at the helm. We're not. We're not. January 27th is the day to take to the street, the first day to take to the streets, the first day of what's going to take months. That's how long it's going to take to inject some spine into the Senate and the House. You don't want to do it? Okay, don't. But January 27th, a Saturday, is the first day. Got to be there. Got to be there. Back to your phone calls. Martin is calling from Springfield, Missouri. Hey, Martin.
Hey, how are you?
Fair to partly cloudy. How are you?
Oh, I was just thinking. I mean, as an Englishman, it strikes me as kind of amusing. I mean, there's this kind of loud-mouthed arrogance that Bush represents, where he's going to tell the world how to be free and present democracy to everybody, etc. And we're all just looking at America and thinking, how about you guys getting democracy? You know, here you have a total dictator. You're like a giant banana republic. You've got a total dictator at the helm. And what's interesting is when Bush originally stood for election, I remember I was standing with some friends and saying, how is it even possible? Here's a person who is his whole background is pathetic. He's a loser at school. He's a loser in the military. He's a loser in business. He's a loser in his personal life. He's a drunk driver who's only apologizes after he's been caught. He's a completely low class idiot. And people over there are actually seriously considering him as the leader of the country.
Martin.
Yeah.
What do you think it would take to have the English or the UK
come back,
reinvade us? Come over. You know, we got weapons of mass destruction. We threaten our neighbors and we gas our own people. Do you think when you go home you could convince Blair before he leaves office to turn the...
Well, he's another idiot. We say in England that, you know, when Bush farts, Blair apologizes. But the
Hold on a second. I got to take a break. Don't go away. Stay there, Martin. Stay there.
I've reminded the Prime Minister, the American people, Mr. Prime Minister, over the past months that it was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship.
Ah! He just makes me crazy. All right, back to Martin. Brit here is very politely handing me my own ass, but that's okay. I understand. You know, I was just reading something that Blair, not to change the subject, I just got to get this in because, I have no respect for Tony Blair. I have a lot more for Blair than I do for Bush. But Blair started out as kind of a Clinton-esque figure, not that that's all good. But, has he gone down the toilet since he aligned himself with George Bush. And now I understand, in the few months he has left, he's trying to turn the UK into a police state in much the same way as Bush is doing here. Change the subject, but what the hell is going on with Tony?
Well, I think that, again, the leading political figures in our two countries and elsewhere, they don't really represent their country. They don't represent anything that they talk about. Ultimately, they're all whores. They're all corporate. They're all paid by giant corporations. I mean, in the early days of America, your leaders, your political figures, they were paid very little. They weren't beholden to anybody. They were willing to risk being shot and hung by the British, by the forces they opposed. They went into politics out of a extraordinary courage and integrity and generosity. Today, politics is a place where the sleaziest and lowest of mankind can go in there and fulfill their agendas. They can get, paid big crumbs off the very wealthy internationalist table. That's why they stand for politics. I mean, there's practically nobody in world politics with the exception of, say, people like Chavez, for instance. I mean, one great point in his favor is that Bush can't stand him. So obviously there's something good with the guy. But, you know, the vast majority of politicians, not practically not a single word they say is true. They have no relationship with truth, which is, for instance, Bush is why everybody laughs at his English. It's so pathetic. But I think it's a result of the fact that he's such an extraordinary liar that he actually can't remember the meanings of words. They're just like sounds.
Oh, I know, I know. And to answer what you asked a few minutes ago of being an observer of the political scene and wondering why, how on earth the American public would allow this rat bastard to become president.
Yes.
Well, remember, in the first place, we didn't. That was decided by the Supreme Court, and Al Gore would have been president had they not stopped the vote counting. But I
think. Well, yes and no.
But
yes,
well,
yes
let me finish, because I take your point. How did he ever get the nomination for the Republican Party? But the answer,
yes.
The answer is in your question. Yes, he's an incompetent freak. Yes, he's a failure. Yes, he's a dolt and a fool and an idiot and easily manipulable. And Dick Cheney knew that. Rumsfeld knew it. All the gang of convicted felons from the Iran-Contra Ronald Reagan era knew that. So they picked him. He didn't pick them. They picked him and said, you know, this guy is so baseline stupid that we can get him to do anything. We can get him to lie us into a war because we all will make money off this war. We can get him to stand up there and be this half-witted, half-assed front man for one of the most criminal enterprises in the history of the human race. So that's how he got the nomination. His election was determined by the Supreme Court after thousands of votes, millions of votes had been stolen, and another several million had not been counted and will never be counted. They're gone.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that. But there's two things to consider there still, that regardless of how many people actually voted for Bush as an individual, still the vast majority of people in this country believe in the system. And the system itself is rotten to the core.
It is indeed.
Yeah, it's like the Wrestling Federation over here. I mean, if you ever tune into that, you'll see the audience, they're actually seriously cheering for a guy in one corner and booing for a guy in the other corner.
I know.
And they're all owned and paid by the same management. And the politics in this country is the same. And the big criminal, honestly, and I think you'll agree with me strongly here, the big criminal is not somebody like Bush, who's just an instrument. The real criminal, I believe, in this country today are the mass media, as owned by half a dozen giants.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Because people can't make their minds up, because everything that people think practically over here is based on the information that's channeled to them through the media. They ultimately have very little choice in what they think.
That's one of the major issues that we talk about on this program. That's one of the reasons I go to the British press, I go to the French press, I go to the Middle Eastern press, I go to the South Asian press, I go to the Australian and New Zealand press, in order to get a perspective on these global stories that may be still colored by the national interests of the country's media that's reporting them, but they're not colored to the extent that they are in this country.
Right.
You know, I'm not so naive as to believe that corporations don't control media in other English and non-English speaking countries around the globe, but there also are independent media outlets, independent in the sense that they are not grinding an agenda like, say, Rupert Murdoch. Murdoch, whether he's in Australia, the UK, China, the United States, makes no difference. This rat bastard is going to grind on that neo-fascism until it becomes gruel enough where we all can suck it down a straw.
I agree, but I think, again, though, we're left with, ultimately, as individuals, you know, we're not going to get any real juice out of being, you know, victims of somebody else's evil. Ultimately, we've got to look at what we can ourselves be responsible for. And there's a metaphor which I think is very valuable. I lived in the East, in India, for a long time. And over there, you'll see something which you don't see over here. You'll see a butcher's shop for instance, the Muslim quarters. And outside the butcher's shop, there'll be a goat. and the goats tied with a piece of rope. And inside the butcher shop, you know, there's a whole bunch of goats hanging up. He's the next one, you know, ready for the block. And, of course, a goat could very easily and quickly chew through a piece of rope and run.
Mm-hmm.
But the goat doesn't do this because the butcher gives him a little handful of grass. So that goat is happy to stay there in line for the kill on the basis that he's being given a little bit of grass.
Well, on the other hand, too, the goat is not a sentient being, and the goat doesn't understand mortality. So
well, he's sentient, but he's dumb. I mean, they're definitely sentient, but they're dumb. And
but
I'm
he can't look
you,
in the. But do you think, Martin, he looks in the window and sees goat carcasses hanging there and goes, oh, damn, that's going to be me, but screw it, I'll stick around for the grass.
Exactly the point. Similarly, over here, human beings, because in our modern age, there was a book written in the 50s by a Hungarian communist called Jan Kovacs. It was called Another Shot Was Fired. And it was basically a manifesto on how to utterly subvert and take over a democratic society without violence.
Yeah,
you're familiar with the book.
Yes, I am familiar with it, yes.
Well,
believe it or not, I am familiar with that book.
No, I know you. Hey, you're very intelligent, very informed, and I love your passion. And I was just flicking through Sirius, and I thought, wow, this guy is actually telling some truth. What an extraordinary sight.
Hey,
in
Martin,
America,
Martin, I hate to say this, but I've got to move on. Now that you've found the program on via Sirius, I hope
I will listen. Can I make one last quick?
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
So the point that Kovacs made, aside from you fool people by complete control over the media, the biggest one is that you feed them with cheap sense gratification so they can't think. You give them hundreds of channels of TV to watch.
Right.
You give them loads of varieties of beer. You dull them. This is the American people are getting their handfuls of grass from the butcher. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to really question a social situation that's giving them, even though it's all on credit and they're going to have to pay sooner or later, that's giving them so much cheap crap. That's the biggest problem.
Well,
that's
another theme of the program, that the American population, of which I'm certainly a part of that population, is the most underinformed and over-entertained in the history of the human race. And
yeah, they've gone soft.
That's the function of television, is to which is where most Americans get most of their news.
Yes.
The function of television is to make us not allow us, but make us forget. And,
absolutely.
And if we ever wake up, the giant awakens and there'll be some changes. But I don't know if.
Well, you need a new revolution, I tell you. This King George is 100 times worse than us. And our King George was mad and couldn't even speak English. But this guy's worse.
he is indeed. Thanks, Martin. Hope to hear from you again. Take care.
A pleasure. You
All
too.
Right. All right. Appreciate your call.
I opened my mouth.
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
And the anchorman was saying, blah, blah. And I replied, bah, bah. And the anchor woman was saying, blah, blah. And I replied, bah, bah. Then I remembered, electronic media creates reality. Electronic media creates your mind. Do you watch the nightly news? Do you watch it faithfully? Night after night.
Angels from the great beyond. It's about 10 before the hour.
They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song.
Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls tonight out of Phoenix, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall in New York, Militant Mods at MikeMalloy.com, God Knows Where, Ben Birch, White Rose Society in Illinois, archives the program. Go to NovaMRadio.com's website and have some fun. Oh, and Catherine Bay is the executive producer. We decided to play a little Leonard Cohen there for one of our emailers. He knows who he is. Back to your phone calls. Lois is calling from Glen Allen, California. Hey, Lois.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I have four sentences.
Let them rip.
Okay, let them rip. We talk constantly about Iraq, but when are we going to talk about the cause? That is, what we've all seen with our own eyes, namely the World Trade Center towers collapsing exactly as if they were a controlled demolition. There's a number of good videos available that show the towers exploding and collapsing at near free fall speed onto their own footprints, just like controlled demolition.
As a reality check,
people should see these videos and then pretend that the official story is that the towers were brought down with demolition explosives.
Mm-hmm.
And then see if you want to jump up and down and say, no, 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 it was the fires on the 80th floors that caused all the steel to soften.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that the buildings could drop to the ground in seconds.
Oh, I know. Listen, Lois, when you talk to me about that, you're preaching to the choir. I am no more convinced of the official story of what happened on September 11th than I'm convinced that there's no such thing as gravity. The truth of that day, I don't know how many generations in the future that truth will be revealed, if it will be revealed ever.
The Warren Commission.
Yeah, we are 45 years from what happened to Kennedy, and we still are absorbing lies and BS where it concerned that. Now, I know a lot of people say, oh, come on, for Christ's sake, get off of it. Kennedy was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald. The towers came down because they were struck by airplanes.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Well, you know, I any intelligent person that has seen the videos that I've seen, they come away and they say, no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. And it's just curious to me that, you know, there's every call is about Iraq, but nobody talks about the World Trade Centers your show or Tom Hartman.
We've spent inordinate amounts of times talking about it, Lois.
In the past, perhaps.
Yeah. And there's nothing more that I can bring up right now that I feel will prioritize what's facing this country, because yes, everything does stem from September 11th. 2001 in the Bush crime family, everything, and I understand that. But the immediate thing right now is what these evil people are doing, where it concerns destroying the Constitution as a result of 9/11. Fine, I don't disagree.
Right.
Invading Iraq, invading Afghanistan, and that's kind of where the energy's got to be focused now. I count on the so-called non-mainstream media to keep the pressure on where it concerns the 9/11 truth. Organizations, and I do the best I can, but I've got these other things I've got to focus on. Listen, Lois, I got to go.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you checking in. You have
Bye.
A nice evening. All right. Alex is calling from Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Alex, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good evening.
Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter, Alex. Anything will work.
I've gotten to the point now that I'm so flabbergasted. Of course, the Shiites, they can bubble a number hanging. I mean, these guys can't do anything right except when they do journalists.
That's true. They know how to do journalists. They know how to do people who what the hell? You're right though. They certainly don't know how to hang someone. Or on the other hand, they do know how to hang someone, and that was another revenge killing.
Absolutely revenge, just to make the Sunnis get so far beyond recognition that things continue to get even worse.
Yeah, because you got to wonder, they're hanging two guys. One guy, the right amount of rope is used, so his neck snaps and he dies. The other guy, the wrong amount of rope is used. Same gallows, same rope, same hangman, same everything. But
and
they
he gets decapitated.
Yeah, they give him enough rope so when he falls, his head snaps off, and he happens to be Saddam Hussein's brother-in-law.
His half-brother.
Or whatever the hell he was. So... and a Sunni. So, you know, go figure. I mean, you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, and you don't have to be an expert on Iraq policy to understand why that happened.
This other friend of mine, it's his birthday today, and he's a former Republican also, and he came up with this thing. He said if stupidity had a label like a religion,
yeah,
that George Bush would be Jesus Christ.
That's very true. All right, Alex, we're out of time. I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate what you had to
say. Absolutely.
All right, we'll talk again. We'll talk again. Yeah. All right, I've heard that before, but it's still funny. If stupidity were a religion, Bush would be Jesus Christ. Yeah, well. All right. Are we out of time? Oh, no. I could have allowed him to talk for another 20 seconds. Uh-oh. Well, what's going on tomorrow? Gonzalez is testifying. This is going to be fun. If you're anywhere near a television tomorrow and where you can look at it and listen to the audio, do that, because it's going to be, I think there's going to be some fireworks. I think they're going to kick his ass the way they kicked Condi's rear end. And as far as the audio from today's press conference, White House press conference, to everybody who wrote to me and said, well, it's right there at whitehouse.gov, because the transcript's there, again, I'll tell you, that transcript and the audio are two different things. You know, if Kathy can't find it, it doesn't exist. Trust me on that. Thanks for participating tonight. I appreciate it. All right, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.